Well, tonight we're beginning the 37th chapter of Isaiah. The 37th chapter is just simply a continuation of the story that we have in the 36th chapter. And this 36, 37, 38, and 39th chapters, all four go together. This is the historical area of the book of Isaiah. And it's telling the specific details of the attack and siege that Sennacherib and his Assyrian army make upon the city of Jerusalem and their king Hezekiah. In the last chapter, that is chapter 36, we had the account of Rabshakeh, who was the minister of Sennacherib. We have the account of him coming to Jerusalem and doing all in his power to persuade these people to surrender, explaining to them that their God can't help them, that none of the gods of the other countries have been able to help those people, that Hezekiah has even gone against God as he interpreted Hezekiah's actions of destroying the idols and the groves, and that the king of Assyria was bound to be victorious over them. Well, when the servants of Hezekiah, who were Eliakim and Shebna and Joah, when they went back to Hezekiah and brought him the news of the threats and the blasphemy and the threat of captivity and siege, then we have the actions of Hezekiah beginning in this 37th chapter. And it came to pass, when King Hezekiah heard it, that he rent his clothes, and covered himself with sackcloth, and went into the house of the Lord. Now, it was a common thing, when showing grief or absolute disgust, to tear your clothes, or rent your clothes, to cover with sackcloth, which was a cheap kind of a cloth that would denote mourning. Certainly, sackcloth was not a fashionable type of garment to wear, but it, when worn, demonstrated that you were in some kind of an abstract state of grief or mourning. And he went into the house of the Lord, and the house of the Lord here would have to be the temple. Went to the temple of the Lord. Now, Hezekiah had been stressing that the Lord was to be worshipped at the proper altar, in the proper place, and proper way. He had been destroying the altars and the groves and the idols that went with the false gods that were worshipped in that land before they came. And so this would be a most appropriate place to go, was into the house of the Lord or to the temple. And he sent Eliakim, who was over the household, and Shebna the scribe, and the elders of the priests covered with sackcloth, unto Isaiah the prophet, the son of Amos. Now here again we have a very appropriate action, and one that sets a very good example and precedent for us. Hezekiah was in a state of great stress. The whole area of Judea and Jerusalem was under great threat and duress. And so what do you do in a case like that? You go to where you're going to be near the Lord. In this case, it was the temple. And you then send for the message that the prophet may have. Today, instead of our having a prophet who is miraculously inspired, we have the works of all of the prophets in the Bible, the New and Old Testaments. And so we then are free to go to that source, to take our problems, our troubles, there to that source, and to seek an answer from God from that source. Because we have all subjects which would be encountered in our lives and about which we'd need an answer from God, we have them in dealt with in the Bible, one way or another. And many times we read things and do not realize that that is applicable to a situation that we may yet in the future face. So he went unto Isaiah the prophet, the son of Amos. And they brought this problem to Isaiah. And they said unto him, that is, these servants of Hezekiah, said to Isaiah, Thus saith Hezekiah, This day is a day of trouble, and of rebuke, and of blasphemy. Now that was Hezekiah's description. It's a day of trouble. Certainly it was trouble for the people of God. They'd just been threatened with having their city sieged and being forced to starve to death. They'd been told that the very best they could expect was to be led away captive to a land like theirs. It was a day also of rebuke. Now, this word rebuke can be looked on in two ways. Number one, it can be that Sennacherib and his servants had rebuked God and the people of God. But it can also be that the people of God had been rebuked by God himself for having been disobedient. And because of their disobedience, he had allowed this army of the Assyrians to make their assault and their threat. It's a day of rebuke, and you can look at it both ways. And thirdly, he says that it is a day of blasphemy. And the blasphemy, of course, is due to the fact that the men sent by Sennacherib had blasphemed God. They placed God on the very same level as the idolatrous gods. They had accused him of not having enough power to resist their strength, and it was certainly a day of blasphemy. And so he sums this up in a little figure here. He says, For the children have come to the birth, and there's not strength to bring forth. In other words, it's as though a mother who was ready to give birth to her child, it was time to be born, term was here, and so everything was ready for the labor process, but the mother didn't have enough strength to continue with the labor and to bring forth the child or the children. And so this would be a real catastrophe. And that's the way that this is summed up then by Hezekiah to Isaiah. The children are come to the birth, and there's not strength to bring forth. There's a real emergency situation. And so he goes on, It may be the Lord thy God will hear the words of Rabshakeh, whom the king of Assyria, his master, has sent to reproach the living God, and will reprove the words which the Lord thy God hath heard. Wherefore lift up thy prayer for the remnant that is left. So his reasoning is like this. It just may be that your God, Isaiah, that the Lord thy God will hear what's happened, hear these words of Rabshakeh, and these words of reproach, and he'll reprove these words which he's heard. So he beseeches Isaiah. He says, Wherefore lift up thy prayer for the remnant that is left. And certainly there had been reproach. As we said, God was compared to the idolatrous gods. And the people of Jerusalem were just told in very plain facts, Do not be deceived. Do not think this God can help. He's not going to be able to help you. So he says, lift up thy prayer for the remnant that's left. Now the word remnant means, of course, those that are left. It does not necessarily have to mean a small number. A remnant could be a large number, but it's those that are left. And as we think of what had happened up to this time, 46, as I understand it, 46 walled cities had been already taken by this Assyrian army. Many people of Judea had been either destroyed or captured or completely subdued by the Assyrian army. And so really there was a remnant that was left. And he says to pray for the remnant that's left. And this seems to be a situation and a prayer that has been offered up on numerous occasions by the people of God. A prayer for the remnant that is left. So the servants of King Hezekiah came to Isaiah. And this was the message that they brought when they came. And Isaiah said unto them, Thus shall ye say unto your master, Thus saith the Lord, be not afraid of the words that thou hast heard, wherewith the servants of the king of Assyria have blasphemed me. That's the first thing Isaiah told them. Do not be afraid of the words which you've heard, the servants, and this word for servants here is really boys or young men. And some of the scholars seem to think that this use of the term boys here is used on purpose to show that these men were not mature, understanding men who came and did all the blasphemy, but they were just like immature, rebellious children. And so this was the way that God spoke about them. Do not be afraid of these words, where these boys or the servants of the king of Assyria have blasphemed me. Behold, I will send a blast upon him, and he shall hear a rumor, and return to his own land, and I will cause him to fall by the sword in his own land. Now that verse 7 is summed up in a brief nutshell what is going to happen to Sennacherib. And Isaiah is telling Hezekiah's messengers, he's telling them what's going to happen in a very brief saying here. He said, I will send a blast upon him. The word blast here can be translated several ways, but it really means either a wind or a spirit. And it's probably more properly translated, I will send a spirit of fear upon him. And he shall hear a rumor. Now we're going to read about this rumor in a few verses. The rumor was that there was a powerful king who was coming after him. Now the rumor, of course, is to Sennacherib, and we're talking about Sennacherib. He's the one that's going to have the spirit of fear. He's the one that's going to hear a rumor. And he shall return to his own land, and I will cause him to fall by the sword in his own land. Now we're going to discuss all of that before this chapter's over. So Rabshakeh, in verse 8, we have a new paragraph, and we're looking at another scene now. We've just seen what Hezekiah did. He didn't give an answer to Rabshakeh. He went to the temple of the Lord. He sent messengers to Isaiah, and they're presenting this problem to the Lord and see what the Lord suggests. So Rabshakeh, no doubt, he left and returned and found the king of Assyria warring against Libna, for he had heard that he was deported from Lachish. Now remember last time when Rabshakeh came, Lachish was the city that was being besieged. Well, now we find that Sennacherib and his Assyrian army have left Lachish, and they've gone to another city, which is about 10 miles from there, called Libna. And no doubt they're probably laying siege to it. They either had been successful at Lachish or they'd given up. I don't know which. Now they were at Libna. And so Rabshakeh, he returned to the king. And he heard say concerning Tirhaka, king of Ethiopia. Now this is that rumor that we read about two verses back. Tirhaka was a very powerful king. He was the king of Ethiopia, and he did also gain complete dominance over the country of Egypt. So he was a powerful king. And the man that he got the dominance from was really the one who was responsible for making Sennacherib leave Egypt this time. He left Egypt not having subdued Egypt like he wanted to. And the man that was responsible for it was the one that this Tirhaka eventually superseded and became king not only of Ethiopia but also of the land of Egypt. Well, he heard say concerning this man named Tirhaka, king of Ethiopia, he has come forth to make war with thee. That's the message. That's the rumor. And it, like most rumors, have some basis of truth, and I suppose it was a true report. He's coming forth to make war with thee. Now, this would make Sennacherib then have to make a decision. He could no longer just afford to sit here and besiege these cities like Lachish and Libna and threaten Jerusalem and wait, because there was a powerful king on the way to make war with him. It wasn't enough for him just to have left Egypt. Now they were coming after him. And so he decided to act in such a way as to bluff Jerusalem into going ahead and surrendering. And maybe then, if he could take a city like Jerusalem, he would be able to better protect himself before he attacked by this king from Ethiopia. So when he heard it, he sent messengers to Hezekiah saying. So we have messengers that had come back the second time to Hezekiah. The first time they seemed to be talking more to the people, those sitting on the wall and all. Now they're strictly to Hezekiah. Thus shall you speak to Hezekiah, king of Judah, saying, let not thy God, in whom thou trustest, deceive thee, saying, Jerusalem shall not be given into the hand of the king of Assyria. Here again we have blasphemy toward God. He is trying to do all that he can to destroy their trust, their reliance, and their confidence on the true and living God. And he does recognize that there is a certain amount of trust here in God, because he incorporates this idea in his speech. Let not thy God in whom thou trustest deceive thee, saying Jerusalem shall not be given into the hand of the king of Syria. Now these arguments made by Rabshakeh and also by Sennacherib are very convincing arguments, and they have a lot of logic to them. And I think we ought to understand that whenever we are opposed by the forces that are against God and that are not the truth, we're going to encounter a lot of logical reasoning. We're going to encounter a lot of forceful, apparently truthful argumentation, but that's all a part of the power of the devil to deceive. As a matter of fact, most people, when they're discussing a Bible subject, they prefer to leave the Bible completely out of it and just go strictly on logic. And whenever you enter into a discussion like that, you have very little that you can defeat the person's false doctrine with. Whenever you reduce yourself to logic and he's on logic, they just cancel each other out. There must be the element of the truth in order to be able to be successful in defending the way of God. And the truth, of course, comes only from the Bible. So he further reasons with Hezekiah like this. Behold, thou hast heard what the kings of Assyria have done to all lands by destroying them utterly. And shalt thou be delivered? Now, they hadn't really destroyed Egypt. And they certainly hadn't destroyed Ethiopia. And the king of Ethiopia was on his trail now, it seems. But this is what he said, that you've heard that the kings of Assyria, what they've done, they have destroyed all lands. And shalt thou be delivered? Well, you're just one more in a long line of conquest for these kings of Assyria. Are you going to be delivered? Have the gods of the nations delivered them which my fathers have destroyed, as Gozan and Haran and Rezep and the children of Eden which were in Telasser? Now he names these towns and or cities, and he says, have the gods of the nations delivered them which my fathers have destroyed? And he names the cities that have been destroyed by his fathers and by the Assyrian power. And most of these cities are in the area of Mesopotamia. Gozan was in Media, and it was named after a river that ran through Media. Haran was a city that Abraham went to after he left Ur of the Chaldees. And this place of Eden, nobody knows where that is, but some Bible commentators have reasoned like this, that Eden was a place muchly recognized even up to the time of Isaiah, and within Eden was also another place known as a garden, or the Garden of Eden. That all of Eden wasn't the garden, but the garden was just a portion of an area known as Eden. And we have several references in the Bible to Eden. And I don't know if that's true or not. Eden may be an entirely different place, but I just give you the benefit of their reasoning on it. Where is the king of Hamath and the king of Arphad and the king of the city of Sepharvaim, Helna, and Iva? And these are places up in Samaria. I want to say Assyria. Cities in Assyria, and also in over in the regions of Assyria that had been conquered by the Assyrian power. And so he's using plain logic and reasoning and facts here. The history speaks for itself. All of these other kings once stood right where you stand now. They trusted in their gods and they were not able to withstand. And Hezekiah received the letter from the hand of the messengers and read it. Now this was, of course, written in a letter form, and they brought it in, and it was an official document to him, and he received it and he read it. And so here's what Hezekiah did. Hezekiah went up unto the house of the Lord and spread it before the Lord. Now that was the custom, it seems, of Hezekiah. Now here's this letter, this new threat, this new reasoning power, and so he took it and spread it before the Lord. And Hezekiah prayed unto the Lord, saying, now this time as he spread his letter there, and laid this out before the Lord, he prayed to the Lord. And this is the prayer now of Hezekiah. O Lord of hosts, and Lord of hosts means that he's Lord of all of the heavenly bodies, all of the planets, he's Lord of everything. Lord of hosts, God of Israel, now that narrows it down, God of Israel, that dwellest between the cherubims. As you know, the Ark of the Covenant had over it the cherubims, and it had there a thing known as the mercy seat, and the mercy seat was the place where God was. That was the presence of God between the cherubims. And so Hezekiah makes reference to that. He said, that dwellest between the cherubims, thou art the God, even thou alone, of all the kingdoms of the earth. Thou hast made heaven and earth. So Hezekiah, it seems, wants to impress upon God that in spite of all of this blasphemy, in spite of the great temptations it might be to lessen the power of God, he held him as being all-powerful. He held him as being the God. Thou art the God. Even thou alone of all the kingdoms of the earth. It's well for us to remember that lesson too today. There is no kingdom on this earth today that does not fall under the sway and the power and influence of God. And the subject of any kingdom can be the subject of God if they so desire. And so we're not to say that God has chosen one kingdom and rejected another. They're all under God. Thou hast made heaven and earth. Not only are you the God of these kingdoms, but you made them. Then he says, incline thine ear, O Lord. And this is the term that we humans might say when we're speaking to each other, you know, bend your ear closer. Listen to me. Get into a position where you can hear me. And hear. Open thine eyes, O Lord, and see. And hear all the words of Sennacherib, which has sent to reproach the living God. Hezekiah says, Lord, I want you to know all of this. Hear all of this. Now, you know, it's nice to be able to approach God with the attitude of, I want you to hear all and see all and know all. And not have to approach him and having had deeds that we're responsible for and just rather not talk about those deeds. We want to just completely... I hope God doesn't even know about them. God does know about them, and if there's deeds that are bad, then we need to take care of them and get forgiveness of them. And if otherwise, then we ought to be able to open our life as a book, like Hezekiah is opening these events. Of a truth, Lord, the kings of Assyria have laid waste all the nations and their countries. Now, here was this letter. This letter said that none of these others had been delivered. I've laid waste all lands, me and the kings before me of Assyria. And so Hezekiah's reasoning, he says, of a truth, Lord, the kings of Assyria have laid waste all the nations and the countries. It says, Lord, it looks like to me that what he's telling me is the truth. And have cast their gods into the fire, for they were no gods, but the work of men's hands, wood and stone. Therefore they have destroyed them. Hezekiah reasons, he said, they've cast their gods into the fire, and I can understand how they were able to do this, for they weren't really gods, not like you are. They're not a god. They were the work of men's hands, wood and stone. And so they were destroyed. And we have a little interesting aside here is, in that the kings of the east, when they captured a people, the first thing they would do was destroy their religion and their mode of worship. They got rid of their gods. They destroyed their temples or their groves or their altars. They abolished their method of worship because that was the one cohesive thing that they had by which they could band together and oppose the invading armies. And not only did they do this, but then they hauled the people off into captivity. That was the way they had of killing the spirit of a nation. Later, the Roman armies worked quite differently. The Roman armies, instead of destroying the gods of the people that they conquered, they took their gods and put them in among all the other gods and recognized them as being one of many gods. And in that way, they incorporated the people into their nation gained their trust and their allegiance by proclaiming their god to be one of many gods. So there were many idols during the days of the Romans and the Greeks because they didn't destroy idols. They just put them in a place beside the other idols and added one more to the list. And you know, as Paul went into the city of Athens, he saw one idol there to the unknown god because he didn't want to leave any god out. And both of these methods were effective. I don't know which one was the most effective, but I just mention it as an aside. The Assyrians destroyed the gods and the Romans deified the gods. Now therefore, O Lord our God, save us from his hand, that all the kingdoms of the earth may know that thou art the Lord, even thou only. So Hezekiah says, save us. He's done all these things, and it's true that he has done them, but I'm asking you now to save us. And the benefit, one of the benefits of saving us is going to be that all the earth, all the kingdoms of the earth, may know that thou art the Lord, even thou only. And this would be a very great distinctive and distinguishing mark here to have in the light of the great power that these Assyrians had, to have this one nation, this one city, to be able to stand and not to be subdued by the force of the Assyrians. Then Isaiah, the son of Amoz, sent unto Hezekiah, saying... Now this, I get the impression here that this is the way that the Lord had of answering Hezekiah. He sent a message through his prophet, Isaiah, after this prayer, and this is what the message said. Thus saith the Lord God of Israel, whereas thou prayest to me against Sennacherib, the king of Assyria. Now this is the answer to the prayer. This is the word which the Lord has spoken concerning him. Now, Isaiah is going to quote what the Lord says about Sennacherib. Now, you know, I said a while ago that we couldn't turn to live prophets today like Hezekiah could. But we turn to the Bible, which has the works of the live prophets. And so there are many situations that we might be in which this very same answer that God gives to Hezekiah here would be an outline of the principles that we need to follow and that we need to believe and guide our lives by to get us through. So the Lord says about Sennacherib, the virgin, the daughter of Zion, hath despised thee, and laughed thee to scorn. The daughter of Jerusalem hath shaken her head at thee. That's what the Lord said about and to Sennacherib. And he's talking about Jerusalem now. He calls it the virgin, the daughter of Zion. This is the city of Jerusalem now he's speaking of. He said, this daughter of Zion, this virgin, and these are, of course, are terms that would apply to a dearly beloved daughter, a virgin, one that had kept herself pure and clean and holy, one that could be classified as the daughter of Zion, that is the daughter of my holy place, hath despised thee. Sennacherib, here is one that has despised you. Here's one that's not going to bow down to you. Here's one that's not awed into submission by your threats.